For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Shahnaz Khan in Srinagar, Kashmir.
I'm Amma Bouadi and you are listening to Free Speech Radio News. Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Station WBAI in New York, KPFA in Berkeley and Community Radio Station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Katamesta Simba Rousseau with Aaron Glantz. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. Our technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone and Lindsay Benedict.
Free Speech Radio News is made possible in part by an underwriting grant from the graduate student organization at Stony Brook University. This edition of Free Speech Radio News will be rebroadcast tomorrow at 6:30 a.m. here at WUSB Stony Brook.
Where it's just about 1 minute after 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall, where we look at world events and local things and perspectives of all sorts all throughout the globe. Here on WUSB every Tuesday night from 6 to 7. Actually, tonight we're going to have a slightly abbreviated program because we have a basketball game coming up starting at 6:50. So we have to speed things up a little bit, even though we already go kind of fast as it is. We have to go even faster today. So that means a couple of things are going to have to be done differently. We'll have to curtail our weekly sojourn into corporate America, where we look into things that are happening. We ask difficult questions, that is, as to what certain things mean, like what the K in Kmart stands for, or various other things like that. We'll do that next week. And, of course, we always welcome your cards and letters and email with suggestions as to what we should be asking people to test their knowledge about the corporation they work for. Do you know what the corporation you work for stands for? Not just the letters, but the whole philosophy. A lot of people don't, and it's an important thing. So, we are going to have another slideshow today. We'll try to race through that pretty quickly as well. Today's visit is Latvia. Last week was Lithuania. So people will know the difference between the two, which I think a lot of people probably don't. And of course, we'll be looking at the news and doing our weekly tribute to Tommy Chong. We'll be doing that a little bit later on. I don't know if we'll have time for phone calls, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. As always, our email address, otw@2600.com. And we want to thank everybody for writing in. It's always nice to hear from our listeners, regardless of where you may be. Well, this has been quite a week, hasn't it? We're not going to talk about Michael Jackson, okay? At least not a whole lot. Because everybody is. And it's just the same stupid thing all over again. You know, last week at this time, I first saw the story about, Michael Jackson's house being searched. And I knew right away, oh boy, here we go, all over again. It's never going to end, never going to stop. And, of course, it hasn't since. All kinds of other things going on in the world, you'd never know it. You'd never know it watching American media. Which I try not to do. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't have a choice. Yeah, we say we have a choice. You know, but that's a choice between McDonald's and Burger King. You know, it's not really a choice. Anyway, there are ways you can get alternative media and international media. And if you listen to this radio station, you'll hear all about it, as well as ways of hearing other voices. And, of course, there's the Internet, too, where you can find all kinds of things. true and false, mostly false. Anyway, so they're starting to uncover all kinds of things about the Jackson case now, which, you know, I sort of knew they would. You see, in America, for some reason, and for those of you listening overseas, you know, I know you don't understand just what in the world's wrong with us over here. I don't get it either, but we seem to have this desire to put people up on these massive pedestals, you know? We turn them into gods, and then we delight in tearing them apart after we do that. You know, we turn them into these figures, these icons that you can't get near, and that they're all crazy and eccentric and, bizarre, and they have these amazing tastes and expense accounts and you name it. And then one day they do something wrong, or they give the perception of doing something wrong, and then we dismantle them with just as much joy as we built them in the first place. And that's what's been going on with this Michael Jackson thing for the longest time. You know? I mean, whether it's... you ever watch the documentaries? The so-called documentaries that they air occasionally? I mean, I see these things because I think they're funny. I like to see just what our so-called news organizations do with a story like just a person, you know? Trying to figure out somebody that they can't figure out. You know, this guy keeps changing his face. He keeps changing his appearance. Is he black? Is he white? Nobody knows. There was that thing on NBC a couple of months ago where they just kept showing his face morphing from when he was a kid into being a 45-year-old adult. And it just, you know, okay, it's kind of interesting the first time you do it. But after the first 16 or 17 times, gets a little played out. Yeah, you know, no one's denying the guy's kind of weird and strange, but I'll bet there's lots of weird and strange people out there. You know, maybe a few that don't have money. You never hear about them because the only reason people care is because this guy's rich. Really rich. And you can bet if, you know, Bill Gates ran around wearing a tutu or something and painting his face, and you'd have all kinds of documentaries about him, too, where they'd be saying he's a dangerous person, you know. More so than he is right now. Anyway, so it turns out that the kid is accusing Michael Jackson of molesting him is the very same kid who appeared in a documentary defending him. or actually, the kid was defending him. The documentary was sort of slamming him. The kid was appearing with Michael Jackson saying how, you know, Michael is a great friend and all these people just don't understand and that kind of a thing. And you have to ask yourself, if Michael Jackson was guilty of this, you know, this was supposedly occurred when the kid was 12, why would he appear with the kid that he did this to on film? I mean, why appear with that particular person? It just doesn't make any sense. I just see so many people that want him to be guilty of something, and they really get frustrated when they don't get the evidence they want right away. And now it's turning out that this kid is the subject of all kinds of custody battles, and there's violence in the house he came from, and the mother is some kind of manipulative person, according to the father, or some kind of wife beater, according to the mother. And boy, somehow Michael Jackson is caught in the middle of all this, and of course the kid is a cancer survivor as well, as if the rest wasn't enough for you. So you can look forward to a big, long, California-style, drawn-out court battle that is going to result in all kinds of mayhem and chaos. Unbelievable. And, of course, we welcome your opinions on this. Not that anybody knows anything. You know, I don't know anything. I'm looking at the story. I'm looking at the story. I'm seeing how ridiculous the way they're reporting these things is. You know, if you got evidence against the guy, good, go for it, you know? But if this is just some kind of publicity-seeking stunt, well, I guess it's just, you know, the chickens coming home to roost or whatever. All right, what else? What else we got here? You hear Jonathan Brandis killed himself. You know who Jonathan Brandis was? He was the kid from Sequest. Not C-Lab, not the cartoon, Sequest. That was the show that was on in the mid-90s. That was a show about the submarine and the talking dolphin named Darwin. Yeah, remember that? The reason I liked the show was because it was the first program That and Babylon 5 were the first programs to be done using full computer animated, or what's the proper term here? They used the video toaster. They used the Amiga video toaster for special effects, rather than models like Star Trek had always done up until that point. Now everybody uses, you know, computer-generated art. But Sequest was kind of a milestone because they used the Amiga video toaster, which, you know, right now is, I think, the equivalent of a 386 as far as computers go. But back then, it was about, you know, 10 years ago, it was really a big step. So a lot of people were watching the program for that. The program itself really wasn't all that great. It only lasted 3 seasons. And they kept having these crazy adventures underwater where they'd find all kinds of colonies. I think they found an underwater colony of people, mermaids or something. Was that Futurama? I'm not sure. Okay, I keep mixing up the sort of serious shows with the not so serious shows. But I think they did find people under there. Oh yeah, they found aliens too at one point. They found aliens that came to Earth and landed in the sea and had, you know, their ships down there. And then the last year of the program, this got kind of weird. They moved ahead 10 years into the future. I guess they exhausted all the stories that had taken place in the future already, because obviously this kind of thing doesn't exist in the present. So they moved even further into the future, and there were other planets involved at that point, and I think that the captain, Roy Scheider, moved on to something else, and there was a new captain. But regardless, this guy, Jonathan Brandis, was the kid, the wisecracking computer genius kid, you know, that could fix any problem, you know, kind of the Wesley Crusher of Sequest. And I don't know, he just didn't seem like the kind of person who, well, of course, you know, you say that about anybody who kills themselves. They don't seem like the kind of person who would do that. But, you know, you have somebody who seems to have everything, you know, has talent and youth and looks and all that. And it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything if you're not happy. And what struck me about this whole thing was the fact that nobody really seems to care. You know, I saw a couple of reports on some Usenet news groups, and that's pretty much it. This kid who was a teen idol, and I guess it always goes this way when you're a teen idol, when you're somebody who shoots to stardom, and then you hit your mid-20s, and it's all downhill from there. Well, you know, it's all downhill if that's how you view life, if you think that the stardom is the pinnacle. And of course, I've talked to some people, I've met some people who have been stars, and believe me, that is not the pinnacle. If anything, that's the scariest part of it all. That's where things get really crazy, where you can't live your life, where you can't walk down a street or go to the grocery store, things like that. The things we take for granted, you know, that all goes away. But, you know, there's also the whole thing of being past your peak and not having anything to look forward to, which I guess must affect a lot of child actors. There are very few who actually go on to something in the field and continue to get the notoriety that that they got at that early age. I think it also points to the fact that people are a lot more fragile than we may give them credit for. You think people are very stoic and can get through anything? It's not really true. Everybody's kind of living on the edge. That's something to consider. You know, something to consider when you're talking to people, or just dealing with people in day-to-day life, whether they're your friends, your adversaries, whatever. You know, you think somebody is happy, you think somebody is well-adjusted, and it turns out they're really not. It turns out that they have a lot of problems, anxieties, and maybe they're just not talking to people. So, you know, I didn't know this guy. All I knew was what was on the screen and what was, you know, portrayed. But it's surprising. It's surprising to see somebody like this that doesn't have any kind of drug problems. That's what everybody said. You know, doesn't have any kind of debilitating habits. Just someone who apparently grew disenchanted with life and decided it was time to check out. It's always going to catch you by surprise. So I guess, you know, the thing I'm trying to say is Look at the people around you. And look at yourself. And talk to other people, because that usually helps. Let's hope that kind of thing is an isolated incident. Anyway, what else? Well, you know, the same old crap coming from Iraq. Do we really want to hear any more about it? Bush pays tribute to troops in Iraq. That's the headline. President Bush paid tribute to the sacrifices of U.S. troops in Iraq on Monday, telling soldiers and relatives at a hard-hit military base, quote, "You bring great pride to the people of the United States of America," unquote. Bush said the war in Iraq is making America safer from terrorists who hate what we stand for. How many times is he going to say this nonsense? I mean, do they really come and attack Americans because they don't like the fact that we have freedom? Do you really think that's what it's all about? Oh my God, they got Kmart and Walmart. Get them! We can't have this. We have to have one choice, not two. No, it's not about that. And I'll tell you something else. On September 11, 2001, which has got nothing to do with Iraq, but regardless, the world mourned with the United States, with what happened to us. The whole world was with us. Yeah, there were some lunatics that cheered, I think maybe about 10 in the whole world. And of course, the cameras focused on them and tried to make it represent an entire people. But the world mourned. The world saw something horrible happening to us, and they were with us in that. Today, I think less people would mourn. I think after what the United States has been up to in the past couple of years, I think more people would say, you know, they got what was coming to them if something like that were to happen again. And there'd probably be a bunch more lunatics that were cheering. So yeah, we sure didn't gain anything in that field. And as far as safety, there's more terrorism now than ever before. There's more fear of terrorism now than ever before. So gee, that didn't work out either, did it? And let's see, the countries we supposedly are liberating, Afghanistan, Iraq, I don't think so. You know, it's more bombs and helicopters going down. And you know, 10,000 U.S. troops, I'm not making this up, 10,000 U.S. troops have either been killed or wounded seriously since this whole Iraq charade began. 10,000, think about that. I know the press focuses on the ones who are killed, but there are so many who are wounded. And, you know, when we talk about people losing limbs, I don't know about you, but to me, that's a pretty big deal. And for what? So that more rocket-propelled grenades or whatever can be shot into the sky? I don't know. I don't know what's going on over there. But it sure isn't a stable situation. Yeah, Saddam Hussein was a bastard, but what do you have now? You've got something that you're never going to be able to pull out of with any degree of respect from the rest of the world, or making the people... The people are not in better shape. Otherwise, they wouldn't constantly be trying to kill the soldiers, would they? It's a hard situation, and I don't know what the plan is to get the U.S. Troops out of there, but I can't imagine what they're going through. They never should have been put in that situation to start with. Meanwhile, the Iraqi Governing Council announced a timetable on Monday to select a provisional legislative body by the end of May and a provisional Iraqi government no later than the end of June. We'll see how that goes. See how long U.S. troops have to remain to watch over them. And then they decided also to shut down a television network, accusing it of being a tool for inciting violence and acts of terrorism. This was the network that I believe broadcast a taped message from Saddam Hussein. You know, the same taped message that everybody broadcast, but apparently these guys were blamed for broadcasting it first. Al-Arabiya is the name of the network. The spokesman for Al-Arabiya says, "We were not kicked out of Iraq. We were asked to stop covering for a certain period of time. What we have done is not more than broadcasting what we think is important news. He denied that his organization favors Saddam and suggested that perhaps the translators used by the coalition are presenting a distorted view of what the network broadcasts. What we are doing in Iraq is actually covering the news in Iraq and showing all the points of view that are prevailing in Iraq now. We are trying to be balanced. Our jobs as journalists are not to ignore the existence of Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden or whoever. We can bury our heads in the sand and say they don't exist, but actually they exist, and people want to know the news. So, yeah, that's how we deal with it. We shut down networks and start our own. I believe the Pentagon is starting a news network. It's not going to be popular. A 24-hour news network run by the Pentagon in Iraq. And this is interesting, too. I found this with the help of some people. We've been talking for quite some time about how the names of all the soldiers who are dying are not being made public. Well, they are, actually, and in a site that kind of surprised me, Fox News is doing it. That's right. If you go to www.foxnews.com/story/... Oh, boy, here we go. 0,2933,82432,00.html. You will see fallen heroes of Operation Iraqi Freedom. Of course, they do all kinds of flag-waving things around this, but the important thing is they do have the names of the people who are dying over there, which is something that I think the media is starting to do it more, but they weren't doing it for quite some time. They just said, 2 more soldiers died today, 3 more, you know, and they wouldn't give the names. And I think people have the right to know who's dying over there. On all sides, really, but, you know, this is a start. And I'd like to know who else is, you know, getting wounded and making real sacrifices. And what they're making those sacrifices for. So, okay, there it is. That information is available. And I think that's being updated on a daily basis, unfortunately. Because it has to be. We had President Bush visiting London last week. Boy, what a nonsensical waste of time that was. The whole city of London virtually shut down. Security like they've never seen before. The French president is over there visiting right now. You think he has any kind of security like what Bush had? It's unbelievable. You know, when you have to have that kind of security everywhere you go, including your own country, maybe it's time to start asking, why do so many people apparently want to cause harm to this person or to this quote-unquote way of life? Maybe it's more than just the choices of Burger King and McDonald's. Maybe there's something seriously wrong with how we get along with the rest of the world. Or maybe we're just paranoid. I don't know. What is it? Anyway, this was a funny story. Turns out the newspaper, the Daily Mirror, actually was able to get around all the security and plant one of their reporters inside Buckingham Palace as somebody who worked for Buckingham Palace. They were able to do this. I'll read some of the story. A shocking royal security scandal has been exposed by a Mirror reporter working secretly as a footman. Ryan Parry infiltrated the heart of Buckingham Palace for 2 months as police and senior staff prepared for the state visit of George Bush. Parry, who used bogus references to get the job, was still in the palace last night, this story was from last week, as Mr. Bush arrived. He watched unchallenged as the president and his wife Laura were met by the Queen and Duke of Edinburgh in the palace garden at around 8 p.m. He had a full view from a pitch by the state dining room through a net curtain. I'm not sure what any of those words mean, but it's British, you know. Had he been a terrorist hell-bent on assassinating the royals or Mr. Bush, nothing could have stopped him. Parry, who infiltrated the palace 2 months ago, would have served breakfast today to the president's chief aides, including National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice and U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell. Bush's exact itinerary had been handed out to staff more than 90 minutes before he arrived. In the wrong hands, those details could prove devastating. Even the time the president, met by Prince Charles at Heathrow last night, was due to get up today, 5:30 a.m., was given out. But Parry walked out of his 11,881-pound job at the end of his shift last night, leaving his uniform on the bed in his room at the palace. The security scandal will send shockwaves across the world. Yeah, they're a sensationalistic newspaper, but they are funny. Our investigation exposes the serious flaws in the £10 million security operation to protect Mr. Bush. Our probe began less than 2 months after police vowed royal security had been tightened following comedy terrorist Aaron Barskak's gate crashing of Prince William's 21st birthday at Windsor Castle. But it was the ease with which Parry, 26 years old, got the job that is so shocking. His credentials were never properly checked, although a simple search on the internet would have shown his name and picture next to another mirror investigation he carried out last summer into security at the Wimbledon tennis tournament. He was able to wander freely in and out of the palace, often carrying luggage and electrical equipment. On duty, he always had a camera in a pocket, but was never searched. Only hours before the president's arrival, Parry was sent to lay out chocolates and fruit for the U.S. leader and his following. He was allowed into every room to deliver a medium box of Bendix special chocolates, a glass jar of mints, I believe, a jar of chocolate digestives, whatever that is, a basket of fruit, a bowl of strawberries and cherries. And they also say Bush yesterday ditched plans to publicly meet relatives of British victims of the September 11th attacks at the Memorial Garden outside the U.S. Embassy. The event will now take place behind closed doors inside the heavily fortified embassy amid growing security fears. Yeah. So this guy had unfettered access. They have stories about him walking around the bedroom of the U.S. president before he came to stay, left alone to serve food to HRH, Her Royal Highness, at the table on the first floor dining room. He gave a telephone reference from a regular in a pub, apparently. He has pictures of the prince's room with pictures of his ex-wife and a pillow with the word daddy on his double bed. Unbelievable. So that's what the mirror did. Some good, clean fun, you know? Show how silly the whole thing is. All right, what else? Just scanning the news. Boy, you know, sometimes you see the stupidest headlines. Get this. Study. Faster cars, higher speeds lead to more deaths. That's right. They had a study that proves that faster cars and high speeds lead to more car accidents. More deaths are occurring on the nation's highways because car manufacturers are putting more horsepower under the hood of cars and drivers are using the muscle to go faster than ever. Okay, well, that's great. How many millions did you waste on that conclusion? Oh, and the feel-good story of the week. A participant at a KKK initiation was wounded after firing shots up into the sky and having them apparently come right back down. Yes, that's right. A bullet fired in the air during a Ku Klux Klan initiation ceremony came down and struck a participant in the head, critically injuring him. About 10 people, including 2 children, had gathered for the ceremony. The man who was being initiated was blindfolded, tied with a noose to a tree. Tied with a noose to a tree. That's great. And shot with paintball guns as Freeman fired a pistol in the air. Freeman is the guy who apparently shot the gun. Gregory Allen Freeman, yes. Fired a pistol in the air to provide the sound of real gunfire. Anyway, a bullet struck the victim at the top of his head and exited at the bottom of his skull. They skipped the rest of the ceremony and gave him an honorary membership. Sometimes things just sort of work out, you know. That's Darwinism for you right there, right? Racist, guns, you know. Okay, nature, I'm going to take this one. All right. Let's do a quick look at some reader mail, then we'll go to Latvia. People are suggesting some places to go for corporate questions to ask of employees of the corporation to see if they know what's going on, if they know what the corporation stands for. This person suggested 7-Eleven. You know, I was going to try 7-Eleven next time, actually. Maybe we'll do that next week. We don't have time this week, but maybe next week we'll do that. And yes, we know why it was called 7-Eleven. I think it used to be their hours, this person says, because they were open before they were open 24/7. I remember, actually, when 7-Eleven first opened, and yes, they were open from 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, but apparently so many people robbed the store after they closed that they felt it would be better to stay open 24 hours. And so many people still rob the store that they felt it necessary. You might want to check this out. When you go to a 7-Eleven, look at the door on your way out. There's a height indicator. Yeah, that's right, it's a height indicator. That way, when you're running out after you robbed the place, the person can say, well, he was about 5'11". That's what it's for. That's something they do know. I'm sure they're told that in training. But you're not supposed to know that. So if you do, I'm not giving advice to people who rob 7-Elevens, but I'm just saying, if you wake up, and this happens sometimes, you wake up and all of a sudden you find yourself in a situation, like, you know, you're in front of your class with in your underwear or something like that. It's not your fault if you wake up from a dream and you find yourself in a situation. It's just, you know, somebody messed up the whole time frame thing in like a starship somewhere. I don't know. But if you wake up and you find yourself on the way out of robbing a 7-Eleven, you might want to squat or something as you're going out the door so that at least they won't have that on you. Again, that's just, you know, not for people who plan this kind of thing out. This person suggests Burger King, again, 7-Eleven, banks. What do banks stand for? What does First National mean, or Dime, or Chase? I don't know what any of those things mean. I'd have to find out myself. This person suggests that we don't tell the listener on the air what the answer to the question is because they might be listening. Oh, yeah, that's right. People in retail stores all over the world are listening to us right now. This person says the Kmart manager sounded great, but the CVS clerk sounded like someone just told him the answer on the radio. I don't think so. I don't think people are listening. Hey, Matt.
Hey.
How you doing? Matt's here for the basketball game.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Yes,
and,
the women's basketball game against Delaware comes on in about 20 minutes.
All right. Delaware, huh?
Yeah.
Gonna kick their asses.
I hope.
What a wimpy state.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean
that in all due respect to the people listening in Delaware.
Well, actually, have you ever been to Luxembourg, haven't you?
I have, actually. I passed through it, and I stayed there for a couple of days.
You actually stayed there for a couple of days?
Yes,
that's
I
amazing.
Did.
Most people
around.
Only stay there for a couple of hours.
It's a great place. It really is. A lot of big mountainous type, you know,
well, you know why I'm
crevices.
Comparing the two. They're about the same size.
Are they really?
Yeah, and not only that, Luxembourg has the lowest gas taxes in Europe, so if you're, like, traveling from Germany to France, always stop in Luxembourg because the gas is, like, $1 a gallon cheaper. And that's why I always consider Luxembourg the Delaware of Europe, because Delaware is like one big truck stop, too.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's something to consider. One place I want to go is Liechtenstein. That's the place I really want to go.
Yeah, can you... that's
about as big as the Stony Brook campus, but...
you know what you should do? You should have a little bit of a quiz if you have time.
Uh-huh.
Ask people if they know where it is.
Okay, well, I don't think we have time today, but... we'll certainly...
for a future show.
People will write in, I'm sure, and tell me exactly where it is. Of course, they can just look it up.
Right.
Now, you have to know how to spell it. Go ahead.
Yes.
That's a challenge right there. All right, look forward to the basketball game coming up in about 18 minutes or so. This person writes in and says the E in Chuck E. Cheese stands for entertainment. I didn't know that. How many of their employees know that? I don't know. I imagine, you know, it's something they must tell them at some point. And then we got a bunch of people, and you know what? They were right. I totally forgot about this. Last week's pictures, and you might want to, if you're on the net right now, you might want to check out last week's pictures, which would be next to last week's show online. Picture number 8. Yes, there is a UFO in that picture. I totally forgot to mention that. And the reason I forgot was because, the screen I use here is so small that I didn't see it. But yes, this person writes in, while looking at the pictures during your November 18th broadcast, I noticed a disc object in the sky left of the center column in picture number 8. And a whole bunch of people wrote in, which just goes to show you that, yes, that is a UFO. That's, you know, I took the picture and there's a UFO around there, and boy, it's pretty scary. Pretty scary. There's people playing Frisbee around me, too, which was also scary, but never mind that. Okay, what else do we have here? Yes, this person writes in, wants us to call BASF. I don't know how you call BASF, but if we could call... And I imagine if you call someone a BASF, they probably know what it stands for. It's not like they have stores. The initials spell out a German name that I forget, although I'm sure the F is Fabrik. the fun version I've gotten from some employees is that it stands for buy and sell factories, which is incorrect, but more succinctly describes their business practices. Also, I'm sorry to hear you only have 2 Cheech and Chong albums, but hopefully one of them is the wedding album. Well, actually, it's not, but I've ordered it, actually. I actually went out and I ordered the album, and it's on its way here. We have a different Cheech and Chong thing for later on. It's time now for us to go to Latvia, which is the place that we're visiting this week. Be careful not to unplug us from the internet or my cassette in the other room. Okay, Matt knows what he's doing as we set up for the basketball game here. We have this week's sound. We've had a bad history with the sound of changing slides, and I hope that we can settle on something that we're going to use week after week. It just seems that we pick one thing and it just doesn't quite work out, so we had a team of experts work on this one, and this is supposed to be a surprise, is it? All right. And this is the sound that you will hear when you change slides.
Go!
Oh, great. Okay, that's going to be the sound, huh? All right, fine, fine. I don't know if that's going to be the sound every week, though. And you can see this week's slides by going to where you went to listen to the show. You should see it right there at the off the wall section. And if you're listening in the future, well, you obviously clicked on something, so that you should see a link there. All right, let's go to the first slide or whatnot, and you will see this is the poster. And, you know, I forgot to bring the CD of the organ music that I listened to. I mentioned this once before, the organ music in Riga at the church there, the pipe organ. It was really nice, but this was the sign that I saw that indicated that there was a concert on that day, August 20th, I believe. And I was able to translate that and figure out just exactly what was going on. I went to another part of town, bought tickets, and got to see a very confusing pipe organ concert later on, but it was worth it.
No!
This is a building, a church, actually. The church is everywhere, just as most countries in that area have, where you could go up and see. You can see there's a big tower there, many different levels, and you could just look out over the rest of Riga.
Go!
And there are many buildings like that with all kinds of statues and just very ornate architecture of all different sorts.
Go!
Here we have the Museum of the Occupation of Latvia, the entrance to the Museum of the Occupation of Latvia. Now look at the years that are indicated here, 1940 through 1991. That's how long Latvia has been occupied, if you ask a Latvian. That's how long. So they look at the Soviet occupation just as harshly as they do the Nazi occupation.
Go!
Reading from this display, on August 23rd, 1939, Nazi Germany and the USSR signed a mutual non-aggression treaty, now called the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, and the attached secret protocols. Both powers agree that Finland, Estonia, Latvia, and a part of Poland are in the, quote, sphere of influence, unquote, of the USSR. A later protocol also includes Lithuania in the Soviet sphere of influence. In June of 1940, the USSR occupies Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. On the 50th anniversary of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, August 23, 1989, the Estonian and Latvian Popular Fronts and the Lithuanian Popular Movement organized the most massive protest against the Soviet occupation on the road from Tallinn in Estonia to Riga in Latvia, and Vilnius in Lithuania. About 2 million people from those three countries simultaneously joined hands. Now that's a hands across America type of situation that is a lot more meaningful. 2 years later, August 23rd, 1991, the Estonian and Latvian Popular Fronts and Lithuanian Sąjūdis, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, organized another demonstration, the Baltic Road in Flames. Thousands of large campfires are lit along the road from Tallinn through Riga to Vilnius. And
go!
Here you see, this is an interesting picture, you see some pictures of people joining hands throughout those three countries, and in the background you see a reflection of modern-day Riga through a reflection in the glass.
Go!
This is a representation of one of the gulags in Siberia. They put people in these ridiculously ramshackle cabins and had the most horrible conditions. These were people that spoke out against Soviet occupation or who were political dissidents or just dissidents of any sort. And the temperatures there were just unbelievably cold and horrible conditions. And many, many people died there. And, of course, the Latvians see that as a very bad thing, and there's a lot of resentment still to this day.
No!
Now, this is interesting. There was all kinds of recording equipment, and here's something that I think people should know about. Switchboard components from a wiretap system installed by the KGB during Soviet times in the Hotel Riga. They're on display at this museum. The devices were discovered and removed during the hotel's renovation in September 1999. Took that long. The Occupation Museum thanks the management of SIA Riga's Vesnikas for donating these items to the museum.
No!
And if you go to this slide here, which is slide number 9, you'll see some close-ups of those devices.
No!
Hey, there's that building again. You know what? I screwed up. I took the same picture twice and showed it twice here. But as you can see, that's something that you can go up. And I think the second level from the top is where the main observatory is. And I took a couple of pictures from up there as well. This is the TV tower in the distance. I didn't go there. It's just a very big tower, though, as you can see. And every one of these cities has a TV tower, which is kind of the center of I guess, where people go to look out. But I didn't go there. I went to the church instead. And as you can see, it has a very nice view of the town. Very picturesque. A lot of church towers and bridges and old buildings and things like that. In the background of this picture, you see a building that Stalin built, actually, which is another very ugly building that apparently was one of his favorites. It's called the birthday cake because it has all these different layers to it, and everybody hates it, and they wish it would just go away. There in the background, you see a train station. You see, I believe, a train going by. And behind that is a place where there's an open market every day. And those used to be Zeppelin hangars. That's where Zeppelins would park. But now it's used to sell things.
Go!
This is the equivalent of their Statue of Liberty. As you can see, it's a woman holding something up in the air. And it's a very high statue. You can see there's two guards guarding it, and there's somebody standing in front of one of the guards acting like a real wiseacre there, saluting them or something. As we look closer, we see that the woman is holding three stars. You know, I neglected to bring the... I'll mention this next week. What the three stars actually stand for. The Soviet Union did not destroy the statue because they claim that the three stars represented Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia. However, they represent something else that's kind of sacred to Latvians, and that's how the statue kind of remained. And it's guarded by these guards. However, they only guard it until about 7 o'clock at night, and then they leave for the night. So this statue, which represents freedom, is only guarded during the daytime hours. So again, if you find yourself waking up from a dream and in a position where you're taking freedom away from Latvia, I guess nighttime is the time to do it. As you can see, it's a very very high statue, very very scenic, and a lot of little statues at the bottom of it as well. These are soldiers on the way for the changing of the guard, which takes place on the hour. A bunch of soldiers come and march in front of the soldiers that are standing there, and they walk around in circles a little bit, and two of them replace the two that are standing there. And then they walk down the street, and I decided, you know, what the hell, I'll follow them, see where they go. And you see that white van in the distance? Yeah, the white van that's parked there?
Go!
Yeah, they all get into they break out of formation and just kind of walk around like regular people, and then they get in the van and they drive away. They don't do that at Buckingham Palace, so it's a bit more informal here.
Go!
In a park nearby, there's a more somber remembrance of the events of 1991. That's very similar to what happened in Vilnius at the TV tower. A bunch of people were killed by soldiers because they were demonstrating against Soviet occupation. And the point where each person fell has a stone with their name on it. This is the first person.
Go!
And there's another reddish stone.
Go!
Here's one with many flowers on it, and the person's name, of course, is represented each time.
Go!
I walked around the park looking for all these stones, and it wasn't very hard to find them. They all were pretty close to each other.
Go!
And this
Go!
One here, I'm not sure why there are two. Maybe there's a story behind that, but the name is on one of them.
Go!
And that is the last one. Not a very large amount of people who died, but certainly a significant number, and very representative of the fight for freedom there. And here we move on to one of my favorite subjects, payphones of Riga, of Latvia. As you can see, they have that European look to them. This one is white, has all kinds of dialing instructions up on top.
Go!
And my second favorite subject, trains. This is one of those noisy trains that's all wood inside, and this was one of the local ones that went to various towns. As you can see, look at the steps. The steps are very steep, and that's the case with most trains. In that part of the world.
Go!
Here's another variation of that kind of train. Again, another local one.
Go!
And this is an example of how confusing it can be when you're looking for a train. As you can see, that's Perron 4, which I guess means Platform 4. But if you look on the left and the right, you see 5 and 6, which means track 5 and 6. So that means that track 5 and 6 are on platform 4. And wouldn't you know it, they list both the platform and the track when you're looking for a train. So if you don't know what the words mean, you don't know where to go. And when I was in Russia later, where it's, you know, in Cyrillic, I really didn't know what was going on. So it took a bit of figuring out to get that down. And here we see a train approaching at the... this was the station I was at when I was visiting the Holocaust Memorial out in the middle of the forest, which we already did a show about. And as you can see, these are very interesting-looking trains.
Go!
Some of them are rather rather worse for wear. They kind of are falling apart, and there's smoke coming out of them and all kinds of things like that. And our final picture, one of the big diesels hauling a freight train, which uses the same tracks as the rest of the network. That's it for us this week. We're out of time because our show is 10 minutes shorter. We do have our Tommy Chong tribute, and we're going to go out with that. It's kind of a tribute to basketball. Yeah, so let's go out with a tribute to basketball. We'll be back again next week. Stay tuned for Stony Brook Seawolves basketball coming up in just about 4 or 5 minutes. This is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Here's Tommy Chong and Cheech Marin.
Good evening and welcome to
White World of Sports.
Brought to you by
Budweiser.
Breakfast of Champions.
Remember, when you're out of Bud,
tough Schlitz. And also by
Pit Stop, the all-day deodorant for people who can't afford to wait.
And today we journey to
Sofia, Bulgaria,
where we're going to be watching
the United States High School Championship basketball game
between
the East Westchester North Stars, champions of the Southern Conference,
against
the Bloods from Rapp Brow Memorial High School in Newark, New Jersey.
And tonight we will be talking to
Coach JoJo Bubba Jr.,
otherwise known as
Amguana Kick Booty.
Take it away, Red.
Howdy, this is Red Blazer, and I'm here courtside with the coach of the Bloods. Tell us, coach, how are you going to get your boys up for tonight's game?
I'm going to kick booty.
That's right, and I'm Red Blazer, and we're here courtside with the coach of the Bloods. Coach, let's talk about your record.
My record?
That's right.
The hell you want to bring that up for, man?
Well,
hell, I thought you wanted to talk about basketball, man. Now, I did my time, man. I paid my debt to society,
no,
man.
I don't need to
be talking about my record, man.
Well, wait a minute, Coach.
How the hell I know she was 13?
No, Coach, you
misunderstand
me. Hell,
she looked 15 anyway.
Yeah, Coach, what we meant is your one-loss record. Now, you're the winningest coach in the history of high school basketball.
That's right.
And your team has won over 455 games this season alone.
That's right.
And your star center, Tyrone Shoelaces, is averaging over 132 points a game.
That's wrong.
Wrong?
Yeah, he's averaging over 132 points a game.
Oh, that's right. Coach, let's talk about Shoelaces for a bit. Here's a boy who's only 4'11", yet he leads the league in rebounding.
That's right.
Assists.
That's
scoring,
right.
Scoring.
That's
scoring
right.
Over 65 points a game.
That's right.
He seems like he does everything but sell popcorn during halftime.
No, he don't sell popcorn.
Well, tell us, what is the secret of his success? What makes him such a great basketball player?
Well, why don't you just ask him that yourself? Come on over here, Tyrone. Come on over here. The man here want to talk to you.
Tyrone, hello. Glad to meet you, son. Tyrone, what makes you such a great basketball player?
What makes me such a great basketball player? Well, that's simple. I got a basketball Jones.
You hear that? He got a basketball Jones.
A basketball Jones? What's a basketball Jones?
Go on and tell him what a basketball Jones is, Tyrone.
What's a basketball Jones? That's simple. A basketball Jones is when you love basketball so much, you are like a junkie.
Welcome to another evening of Stony Brook Seawolves basketball. Tonight it's the women. They will be taking on the Blue Hens of the University of Delaware, a former America East member, but now in the Colonial Athletic Association. We now join Jeff Bernstein and Ben Batanti on the floor of the Indoor Sports Complex.
Thanks a lot, Matt Mankiewicz, and welcome to the Stony Brook University Sports Complex. Stony Brook women's basketball tonight at the Sports Complex. It'll be the Seawolves of Stony Brook versus Delaware. Stony Brook comes into the game 0-1. Delaware also comes in 0-1. Stony Brook lost 74-62 to St. Bonaventure on November 22nd. And Delaware lost in overtime the other night to Richmond on November 21st, 80-78. We're joined by Ben Bitonti. And Ben, great to see you here tonight.
Thank you, Jeff.
Tough belt Delaware team coming in here tonight.
Boy, you said it. I mean, this is a team that's coming off of a women's NIT bid last year, three times, 21 seasons in a row. This is going to be a tough Delaware team. Lost their first game at home in quite a long time against Richmond, so they'll be definitely out for some revenge here against the Seawolves. And as far as the Seawolves go, it was a strong outing offensively for them against St. Bonaventure, of course, without their leader and star, Sherry Jordan. This team found a way to score, and the problem really came in defensively, where it was just raining threes in the second half behind the arc. St. Bonaventure had a lot of success, and if the Seawolves are going to be successful at all tonight, it's rebounding and stopping the three-point ball.
Well, you mentioned Sherry Jordan. Jordan will not be in the game tonight. She's got... A problem, some internal problems with herself, and she won't be playing today. She also won't be in the St. Louis tournament this weekend, coming up Thanksgiving weekend. So we'll probably see Jordan down the road in December. Danielle DiGiorgio, who did not play in a St. Bonaventure game, is in uniform tonight, and we'll probably see her maybe off the bench depending on how tonight's game goes. But Bojana Bogatic had her best game of her career, I think. She scored 19 points, 9 rebounds off the bench, shot 8 for 13 in 28 minutes of action. They're going to need Bogatic to play very, very well throughout, Ben. The Seawolves are going to be successful in the America East.
Yeah, you're right, Jeff. It was her best game of her career. She posted 19 points, 9 rebounds, as you said. And the 6'4 junior from Serrano, Italy, will definitely be called on to be an inside presence for the Seawolves tonight if they're going to have some success.
Yeah, absolutely. After tonight, the Stony Brook Seawolves, or tomorrow morning, will head out to St. Louis in an early morning flight. I'm not heading out till Thursday morning. Some people have to work. I wish I could leave. But the Seawolves will play on Friday, the 28th, at St. Louis. It'll be a 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time start. And then on Saturday, the Seawolves will play either Indiana, Purdue, Fort Wayne, or Arkansas, Little Rock, either at 7 or 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it'll be interesting. St. Louis is now a member of the Atlantic 10 starting in 2005. Mm-hmm. So they played in the Conference USA this year. So another formidable opponent. We're going to step out for about a minute and a half, send it to Matt Mankiewicz as the national anthem goes on. You're listening to Stony Brook Seawolves Women's Basketball.
Back in the studios of WUSB, Matt Mankiewicz. We'll get you updated on all the things that will be going on in the world of sports. But there's a little bit of controversy going on in New Jersey now with the departure of Alonzo Mourning. What's going to happen with Byron Scott? Have they tuned him out? The team is 5-7 to start off. We'll talk a lot about that on the sports section Sunday night. Coming up at halftime, Ben, Jeff, and I will talk about St. John's and their loss to Fairfield University. And that's a tough one because you know what that means. That means Stony Brook's got a chance in their game coming up this weekend. But let's take a quick look at what's coming up in the NBA. And we're going to have pretty close to a full schedule, games that will just be getting underway. First of all, Minnesota visiting Indiana. And the New Orleans Hornets will be at Miami starting at 7:30. 8 o'clock, it's Philadelphia and Milwaukee. 8:30, Chicago and Dallas. At 9 o'clock, Phoenix and Denver. 10 o'clock, Washington out in Portland at the Rose Garden, the Paul Allen-owned Rose Garden. I wonder if they use Microsoft networking in there or anything like that. They probably don't. But Memphis and Sacramento at 10 o'clock out on the coast. And the New Jersey Nets, the ones we were just talking about,
facing the 7-4 Seattle Supersonics. And that's something that people are going to be keeping a very close eye on as Byron Scott and company try to right the ship. Some big headlines. First of all, one major trade in Major League Baseball. The Marlins cut some payroll, as people expected. They were going to go up to $80 million if they had kept everybody, but they're not going to. Derek Lee, the first casualty. Gold Glove first baseman is now a Chicago Cub. They got in return Hee-Sop Choi, who's also a first baseman and a minor league player to be named. Lee was arbitration eligible. He made $4.25 million last season. We'll talk about that more in greater detail during halftime. But now it's time to send it back to the indoor sports complex with Ben Batanti and Jeff Bernstein, ready to bring you all the action.
Thanks a lot, Matt Mankiewicz, and welcome back to the Stony Brook Sports Complex. As we're a couple minutes away from tip-off here at the Stony Brook University Sports Complex, let's look at the starting lineups for Delaware, the Fighting Blue Hens. Number 4, Liz Hayes, the freshman, 5'7", from Easton, Pennsylvania, out of Easton High School. Number 15, Julie Saylor, the junior 5'11 guard from Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania, out of Council Rock High School. Number 25, Tiffany Young, the junior 6'2 from Fairfax, Virginia. Number 33, Tyra Malcolm, the junior from Wilmington, Delaware, out of Caravelle Academy. And number 50, Tracy Howell, the senior from Newark, Delaware. The head coach is Tina Martin from Lock Haven. In her eighth season, the assistants are Janine Raddis, Tyrone Perry, and Carrie Timmons. For the Stony Brook Seawolves, the head coach, Trish Roberts, in her fifth season, assistants, they're new, two new ones this year, Debbie Ayers and Trisha Floyd. Silva Shellman, the third assistant, is back for a fifth season. Number 4, Stephanie Bartlett, the junior from Lebanon, Pennsylvania. The senior guard, number 12, Teresa Loparino from the Bronx. Number 23, Danielle Ingram, the junior guard from Atlanta, Georgia. Number 33, newcomer Jessica Smith from Butler, New Jersey, out of Butler High School. And the junior, number 44, Boyana Bogatic from Sorona, Italy. Well, you look at both teams, Ben, and can Stony Brook survive in this game here at the sports complex? You know, Delaware comes in as the heavy favorite.
Oh boy, it's going to be a tough go for the Seawolves. Everything's going to have to fall right for them to stick with this Delaware team. But I think it's a possibility. If you're going to have to do it, you're going to have to stop Tierra Malcolm, as you said, 6'1 forward, junior forward from Wilmington, Delaware. She's coming off a career-high 24 points last week against Richmond. So look for her to do some scoring. And for the Seawolves, if you haven't gotten a chance to see the freshmen play, it's a good group. Kelly Watson and especially Jessica Smith, look for some scoring from the freshmen from New Jersey.
Well, the Seawolves tonight are wearing their alternate gray uniforms. Second game in a row that they've worn the gray uniforms. Gray with Stony Brook up front, red and black trim. Delaware playing out of the Colonial Athletic Association wearing the blue with the white trim, UD on the shorts. And we're ready for the tip. Bogatic on the tip. Seawolves going from right to left on your radio dial. And Seawolves win the tip. It's won by Danielle Ingram over Teresa Loparino up top. Little 2-3 zone pressure by Delaware in a half court. Loparino on the left wing. Over to Bartlett. On the left side is Ingram. She hoists the three. It's in the back of the rim. No good. And the rebound comes down to Julie Saylor.
You're going to get shots like that in the zone. Got a hit from the outside.
Up top to Saylor. Seawolves are in the man-to-man. On the right side, it's Howell. Howell with the 15-foot baseline jumper, no good, and the rebound comes down to Bogatic. Bogatic over to Ingram. They look to run. Ingram all the way, no good, and the rebound comes to Tyra Malcolm. Malcolm crosses the midcourt line, just underway here at the sports complex, where no score, and a turnover by Delaware. Julie Saylor's pass goes into the Stony Brook bench.
Teresa Loparino got to get her hand up there and knock the ball out of bounds. Good job. Seawolves going to take possession.
Welcome all our internet listeners also to the Stony Brook women's basketball game against Delaware. Ingram up top, just underway at the sports complex. Bogatic, high-low pass into Smith, goes over her head, no good, and a turnover for the Seawolves. Some sloppy play early on, Ben.
You're right, Jeff, and the uncontested turnovers are going to kill the Seawolves. You got to get that under control, hold the ball, you got to value it.
19 minutes left in the first half. Ben Batanti, Jeff Bernstein live at the Stony Brook Sports Complex. On the left side, it's Hayes. In the corner to Howell. Back up top is Saylor, 12 on the shot clock. Dribbles to the right on the baseline. Scramble for the ball. It's loose. Goes out of bounds. It stays Delaware. Actually, no. 30 seconds. Timeout. Yeah, timeout by Delaware. They do maintain possession. 30-second timeout. We'll keep it here. Ben, very sloppy play early on.
Yeah, but right there, Jessica Smith made a terrific play. First getting her hand on the ball and then getting down, getting dirty, and making causing the jump ball. Before the jump ball, enough presence of mind to call a 30-second timeout. Retains possession for the Seawolves. Tremendously heady play for the freshman.
Key for the Stony Brook Seawolves is the defense. They had a good lead on, say, Bonaventure last game, but the defense inside, foul trouble by Bayona Bogatich, really hurt them. In for Stony Brook, it's the same four starters. To recap, it's Smith, Loparino, Barlett, Ingram, and Bogatich. They have it in the backcourt. Smith inbounds to Loparino in the backcourt. Three-quarter court, full-court pressure by Delaware. Barlett back to Smith. Over to Loparino. Crosses the midcourt line with a nice chest pass from Ingram. To left side is Barlett being double teamed. Up top to Ingram. To Loparino on the right side. Splits the double to Smith. Back up top to Ingram. To Loparino with 10 on the shot clock. Loparino drives. Looks to kick it back to Bogatich. He has trouble. And it's stolen by Tracy Howell. Howell crosses the midcourt line with a crossover dribble. Kicks it back up top to Hayes. In the corner, it's Howell. Back to Hayes with 20 on the shot clock. 18 minutes left in the first half. Hayes takes about the three, kicks it on the right side to Saylor. She hoists the three off the front rim, bounces again. Offensive rebound by Malcolm. She puts it in, and it's now 2-0 Delaware.
Got a box out. Malcolm's dangerous under the boards.
Loparino all the way to Bogatich. She had an uncontested layup, went through her fingertips, and another turnover for the Seawolves.
Got to come up with those, but it's early on. Seawolves showing a little bit of jitters.
Substitution for us.